Between 1986 and 1991, the bodies of 10 women were found raped and strangled to death in the South Korean city of Hwaseong. Their murders were linked to a still unidentified serial killer.
This case was brought to the big screen in the 2003 film Memories of Murder, and 1 year later, the killer may have struck again.
This is Based on a True Crime. I'm Chelsea, and I love true crime.
And I'm David, and I love horror movies.
And this week we have a very special movie that was requested by a longtime member of our cult, Mariah. She recently moved to South Korea, so congratulations. I hope you are having a blast, and I hope you enjoy this episode. It doesn't put you off South Korea forever.
Yeah, that's a huge move, so congrats on that, and thank you so much for the suggestion and for being such an awesome listener. We also wanted to thank some of our recent reviews: Katie G0929, Vin Fett, and Randy Michelle. Thanks for those reviews. That really helps us in terms of the iTunes charts or wherever you happen to write a review. You can even do it on our Facebook page.
And it makes me happy. I like seeing good ones pop up, and then I read them to David, and we both feel good about ourselves.
So. Yes. Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. I just wanted to do a quick shout out to another member of our cult of Based on a True Crime, Beth. She and her friend Wendy just started a new podcast called Fruit Loops, Serial Killers of Color, and they just released part one of The Baseline Killer, which is a great episode, very interesting. I think that, because they are focusing on serial killers of color, it's a lot of cases that I've never heard of. They don't get as much media attention, and they're doing a great job, so congrats, you guys. Also, please stay tuned through the end of our episode to hear trailers from our pod friends, Murderish Podcast, which is hosted by Jamie, who recently joined the Murderly Network. So welcome to the family. Also, Ignorance Was Bliss, a podcast by Kate about crime and also like the psychology behind crime, which is her specialty. It's really great. And also Good Evening Kitties, one for David too. This is a podcast where they review episodes of Tales from the Crypt.
All right, cool. Yeah. Hey, we just talked about that recently.
Yeah. Before we get started, I did want to, just put it out there that there is not much available in English on this case. I, did the best I could with my Google sleuthing, but I think it's really fascinating, and it's a serial killer that I'd never heard of. It just, didn't quite break the news here, but he's very famous there. They call him, the equivalent to our Zodiac killer. And he killed, at least 9 people and just disappeared without a trace. His crimes are very brutal. A warning, this, as I said in the introduction bit, there's a lot of rape, a lot of murder, also the rape and murder of a child. If that is not your thing, you could fast forward to where we talk about the movie, but there's also the rape and murder of a child in there. So, yeah.
Shall we jump in?
Yeah, let's do it. On September 10th of 1986, 71-year-old Lee Won-im left the home she shared with her daughter in Hwaseong to sell vegetables in Suwon. When she didn't arrive home later that day, her daughter reported her missing. In the early morning hours of September 15th, her body was found in the rice fields near her home. Her hands were tied by her stockings, and her face had been covered by her underwear, and she had been raped and strangled to death with her own clothes. Crimes like this were not common in the rural city of Hwaseong, which still contains more farmland than any other city in the Gyeongju province. But over the next 5 years, they would become an almost regular occurrence, the work of a still unidentified serial killer who became known as the Hwaseong Strangler. Police did not have to wait long for a second victim to be discovered. Just a little more than a month later, on October 20th, the body of 25-year-old Park Hyun-suk was found in the Jeonanri Canal, just 4 kilometers or around 2.5 miles from the first crime scene. Police immediately made the connection to the first murder because the killer's modus operandi was identical. Like Lee Won-im, Park Hyun-suk had been bound with her own clothing, raped, and strangled. Police knew they were hunting for a serial killer, but they had never faced a similar investigation. Although they were dedicating many man hours to the task, they had no leads to go on. And within 2 months, the killer struck again. This time he murdered two women within days of each other. On December 12th of 1986, 25-year-old Kwon Jung Bon was raped and murdered while returning home from work, and her body was left on an embankment. 2 days later, on December 14th, the body of 23-year-old Lee Ki-suk was found in the Gwanhwangri Canal. She had also been raped and murdered, and as with the previous two victims, the women were bound and strangled with their own clothes.
Well, around this time, a woman was raped and survived her attack, which was believed to have been carried out by the killer. This woman identified her attacker as a Korean male in his early 20s, who was slender and between 5'4" and 5'6", and blood typing revealed him to be a blood type B. At the time, Korea did not yet have the capability of running DNA samples, so it wasn't much to go on. The killer didn't wait long before striking again. On January the 10th of 1987, the body of 19-year-old Hong Ji-young was found in a rice paddy very close to where the first victim, Lee Won Im, was found. She had been killed in the same manner. Because it was raining around the time of her murder, police were able to find a shoe print believed to belong to the killer. The length was 245 millimeters, roughly equivalent to a men's shoe size of 6.5. The killer did not strike again until May 2nd of 1987, a little less than 4 months later. On that day, the body of 29-year-old Park Yoon-ju was found on Jinan-ri Hill, close to the canal where the second victim, Park Hyun-suk, was found, murdered in the same way as the previous victims. Then, suddenly, the killing stopped, at least temporarily. Over a span of 8 months, the Hwaseong serial killer had claimed 6 victims and had left no trail to follow.
He wouldn't strike again until September 7th of 1988, 1 year and 4 months later, and that was when the body of 54-year-old An Ji-soon was found raped and strangled with her own clothing. Immediately prior to her murder, she had been riding the bus with a man who fit the preliminary description of the killer given by the rape survivor. The bus driver was able to provide information for a composite sketch, which was released on the same day that her body was found. 9 days later, on September 16th of 1988, 14-year-old Park Sang-hee was found raped and strangled in the same manner. However, this case did immediately have some differences from that of the previous victims. The largest difference being that she was found in her bedroom at home in Jinan-ri. So this killer had been striking women when they were walking alone in a pretty secluded area and basically murdering them and then dumping their body, you know, it's believed pretty near to where he attacked them. And this time her body was found in her bedroom. So police found hair at the scene, and they used that hair to link the case to 22-year-old Yoon Moo, a man who worked at a nearby repair center. He was arrested on July 27th, 1989, but police believed that he was not the Hwaseong strangler because, you know, the MO was so different, and because, as you'll see, the serial killer will strike again. So instead, police believed that he was an opportunistic killer, and he copied the MO of the Hwaseong strangler because it was, you know, known and widely publicized, and he was trying to throw the police off of his trail.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
So, you know, these suspicions were proved correct when the killer struck again, but this time he waited even longer. He had a cooling off period of 2 years and 2 months. So on November 15th of 1990, 14-year-old Kim Mi-jung was abducted while returning home from school. She was raped, strangled, and bound with her own clothing, and her body was dumped on a hill in Byeongjeom-dong. In a new display of, I don't know if you want to call it increased cruelty, because he's clearly a cruel, terrible person, but the killer had taken a razor from Kim Mi-jung's pencil box and had cut into her chest 38 times.
Ah, jeez. Yeah. Well, the killer struck for the last time 5 months later at around 9 p.m. on April 3rd of 1991. The body of 69-year-old Kwon Soo-sang was found on Basong-ri Hill. She had been raped and strangled with her own pantyhose. Kwon Sung-sang had been in Hwaseong to visit her daughter, and witnesses observed a man believed to be the killer wearing black clothing with a hood or a black baseball hat. Although the killings ended, the investigation continued. In total, South Korean police dedicated over 2 million man days to the case. They interviewed over 20,000 people, took fingerprints from over 40,000 individuals, and compared 570 DNA samples and 180 hair hair samples to samples taken from the crime scenes. No arrest has ever been made. At the time of the killings, the statute of limitations for murder cases was just 15 years. On September the 15th of 2001, the statute of limitations for the first murder ran out. The statute of limitations for the last murder expired on April the 2nd of 2006. Despite this, the National Institute for Science Investigation held onto the DNA samples gathered from the crime scenes in hopes of one day identifying the killer, in part due to outrage over the statute running out on these and other unresolved cases. The National Assembly lifted the statute of limitations for murder in July of 2015.
In an article published in 2013 in support of ending the statute of limitations, an anonymous police officer is quoted about his experience policing during the Hwaseong serial killings. The officer stated, quote, "The problem with the Hwaseong serial murder case was not the incompetent detectives or lack of scientific investigative technology, but the historical context. During the 1980s, the Korean government was concerned only with the repression of the protests against the regime and the overthrow of anti-government powers. The crimes were not the focus of their attention." So in the early 1980s, and this is greatly paraphrased, I am by no means an expert on South Korean history, but so in the early 1980s, Chun Doo-hwan, who was an army general that had participated in the Vietnam War, conducted a military coup and seized control of the country after the assassination of the previous South Korean president. So throughout the 80s, throughout the time that these murders were taking place, there were very frequent protests against the government, and the police were given orders by the government to repress these protests, and that was, you know, really the priority. So, you know, although the police did everything they could or claimed that they did everything they could, their resources were likely thinned just due to the political climate there.
Well, in the years since the murders apparently stopped, every subsequent murder and disappearance in the area has brought the Hwaseong serial killer case to mind amongst city residents. In October of 2004, shortly after the release of Memories of Murder, a female college student was killed. Her case remains unsolved. In December of 2006 and January of 2007, two more women disappeared near Hwaseong after leaving work. If still alive, the suspect in the Hwaseong serial killings would only be in his mid-50s. He is believed to be an organized killer. Although he did not bring weapons with him to commit his crimes, he had enough foresight to attack the women he killed in secluded locations and followed a meticulous MO. All of the murders took place outside of regular working hours, either on or near holidays or on Saturdays, which suggests that he may have had a regular job. A police officer involved with the case said of the killer, quote, "Given the cruel, abominable modus operandi, he is likely a psychopath. A psychopath does not feel guilty. He or she enjoys the thrill of committing heinous crimes."
Yeah, so that's the story of the Hwaseong serial killer. I do have a few points I want to discuss that I think, you know, tend to come up when you're thinking of a uncaught serial killer, which is, what happened? Why did the killing stop? I feel like another thing that really interests me about this attack pattern is that he started out attacking people and killing them so frequently. And usually it's the opposite, right? Usually they'll start slow and kind of ramp up until eventually they just get caught. You know, something like maybe like a Ted Bundy, who at the end was like killing a bunch of people in an apartment, like multiple people in one night. But this guy killed once a month and then twice in 2 days and then a month later and then took a break for 4 months. And then took a break for a year, and then took a break for 2 years. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, maybe he got sick or something and died. I don't know. It's kind of weird, right? When a serial killer is not caught, and you know, from the witnesses that they do have saying how young he was. I mean, the potential of him still being
in his
50s. Yeah.
I mean, look at the Golden State Killer, the East Area Rapist. I always thought he died because you wouldn't think someone could just stop.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Right. It's like, did he just like, oh, I'm sorry for my ways. I'm going to not do this anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I'm bored of this hobby. I'm going to take up cross stitch. Like,
yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's curious. My instinct is always, oh, he must have died. He must have gotten hit by a bus, or maybe he couldn't take it and committed suicide. But who knows? He could be in his 50s. That's just crazy.
Maybe it was a ghost.
Yeah. actually, speaking of ghosts, when I did this research, I looked for English language articles. Actually, I did want to talk about some of my sources. There's a YouTube video, Five Unsolved Mysteries in South Korea by Merck, which actually had more detail than most of the articles I could find, including Wikipedia. So way to drop the ball, Wikipedia. Also, the Chosun Ilbo, which is an English language Korean news website. Crime-mystery.info. And then actually a lot of the information about the statute of limitations I got from an article, that 2013 article by Elizabeth Hahn called Is the Law Always Right? A Study of the Statute of Limitations and the Police System Through the Three Unresolved Criminal Cases. And one of those is, the Hwaseong serial killings. But yeah, speaking of ghosts, I did, because I was curious, run a couple of Korean websites through Google Translate, which came out for the most part complete gibberish, unusable gibberish, unfortunately. One part though that caught my eye that I ended up picking through for a little bit of information that, don't quote me on this, quote Google Translate on this, but apparently there are a lot of ghost stories associated with this case, basically like this case being cursed. So a bunch of investigators and a bunch of suspects have died very mysteriously.
Oh, interesting.
So one was a suspect in the ninth murder case. This is 38-year-old Cha Mo, and apparently he died by being hit by a train. In April of 1991, another suspect in the 10th case, 32-year-old Jang Mo, was being pursued by police and he fell from the roof of an apartment building. This is according to Google Translate, so it could be a little bit wonky.
Yeah.
But in 1997, a boy, he was 19 at the time, and he was a suspect in the 9th case. He died of cancer. He was only in his mid-20s.
Oh, wow.
Yes. A suspect in the 7th case, who was released after there was insufficient evidence to hold him, committed suicide. A suspect in the 4th and 5th murder cases, who was caught apparently thanks to advice from a psychic. It said, according to Google Translate, that he died of stress from being tortured, which seems crazy, but then you think of the movie Memories of Murder, and they were not very nice to their suspects in that movie. So there could be a shred of truth in that.
Oh, totally. Wow.
Yes. And then in terms of the investigators, the person who caught that man who was arrested for killing the 14-year-old, the one who was found in the bedroom, he died in a traffic accident in 1999. And two more officials, Choi Chong-chi, who was the chief of the investigation department, and Song Mu, died from what's listed as excessive stress. So lots of strange deaths connected to the case.
Yeah, excessive stress from a ghost murderer.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And it's interesting, they talk about, at least in the Google Translate of this page, there being suspects for specific murders that are not the same person, which also makes me think maybe the cooling off period, maybe it wasn't all the same guy, especially if the MO was well known enough for there to be one copycat. Perhaps there were others. Perhaps there were ones who were a little bit better. I know they do have DNA and hair evidence from the scene, so I'm assuming at least some of them have been connected through DNA, but maybe not all of them. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty wild, though, really. So a lot of mystery surrounding just the entire series of murders.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that this is not better known. And it's crazy to me that there are so few English references available. Don't they know how much Americans love true crime? Come on.
Yeah. And the, Memories of Murder hit at a time where I feel like that could have raised a lot of visibility of the crimes. And it wasn't all that long after, I guess, they occurred.
Yeah, it was 11 years after the last murder.
Right.
Or 12 years. Yeah.
Either way, it's a long time for a mysterious, unnamed, never caught serial killer to be out there.
Yeah. Let's put that that DNA into one of those databases. Try to get a familial match. Come on. We did it for the Golden State Killer. We can do it again. Yep. Got to catch them all.
Yep.
Pokemon. Yep. Oh, wait.
Well, sit tight. We're going to dive into our discussion of Memories of a Murder here in a second. We'll be back.
Oh, 비가 진짜 죄가 없어? 진짜 누구까지 마음 비가 안 되냐?
서태윤 경장. 네, 이번 사건 때문에 일부러 자원을 해서 오신.
아들 비오는 밤에 살해됐다고.
10시 풀어줘. 범인 아냐?
다 잡아 제발. 너 뭔데 이 새끼야?
In 1986, Detective Park Doo-man and Detective Cho Yong-ku are two small-town detectives assigned to a double murder case in a small province in South Korea. When several more women are raped and murdered in the same way, they realize that the murderer is the country's first documented serial killer. Because of their lack of experience with a case like this, Seo Tae-yoon, a detective from Seoul, volunteers to assist them in the hunt for the killer. So this is 2003's Memories of Murder, directed by Bong Joon-ho. And this is actually pretty cool because this director is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I had no clue.
A lot of you may know him as director of The Host, which he did in 2006. And that's about the giant monster that comes up out of the Han River and kind of wreaks havoc all over Seoul, Korea. It's really good. I really like The Host. It's so much fun.
I haven't seen it, but I have heard a lot about it, so I have to watch it. Yeah. I think my dad complained about that movie because he thought they showed the monster too soon.
Oh.
He thought they should have revealed it right away. Yeah.
It might be a cultural thing. It is really soon, but it's great. It's so fun. There's two more that maybe a lot of you have heard of. He did 2013 Snowpiercer, and that's kind of the post-apocalyptic futuristic train movie. It's like the train is so long and so big, and because of where society is, like, it's all divided into different social classes, and you know where you're positioned on board kind of says a lot about your social status.
And that's starring Chris Evans, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Captain America himself.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton, I believe, as well. Yep. And I heard they were doing a TV series maybe of it.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yep. And then his most recent movie is Okja, which is a Netflix exclusive. It was kind of a big deal when it came out because he's such an esteemed director. It would be, I don't know, like if Spielberg directed a Netflix exclusive movie. And it's a fantasy movie. If you've seen the trailers or any of the material for it, it's like this really cute, enormous super pig. It looks like a bunch of different combinations of really cute animals. Is really,
yeah, I remember watching the trailer. We might have even had it as our coming soon on the podcast, although I have been refusing to watch it until I know for certain that Okja lives. And all David can tell me is, oh, he heard that Okja lives, and I need better than that. So if one of you out there has seen it and I can trust you not to lie to me, tweet at us and tell us whether Okja lives so I know whether I can watch the movie. Because from the trailer, I'm already super attached.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Bong Joon-ho, also his first movie was a film called Barking Dogs Never Bite. And I never saw this one, but I kind of remember the trailer. It's like a dark comedy, and it's about a man who wages war against the loud barking dogs in his apartment building. I don't know.
I do not like the sound of that. That sounds like some dogs are about to be killed.
They have to check doesthedogdie.com to confirm whether or not that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to this film, he has a 2009 movie called Mother. But he has a new film that's, I think, due to come out next year called Parasite. And it's about a family of four where, I guess, each member of the family has some sort of set of unique characteristics. And beyond that, he has said that there are no parasites or bugs or infestations or infections involved in the movie.
Isn't that the exact premise of The Incredibles, though? Oh, wait, no, I guess they're a family of five.
The Fantastic Four, though. Anyway, great director. And having this as, you know, one of his early films, I think it's just pretty cool.
It's a stellar movie. It's a spoiler alert for when we discuss the movie, but it's excellent. I loved it. Yeah.
It's really good. I'm not going to lie and tell you that it's in English. I mean, it's subtitled.
Yes, this is our first foreign language film that we're covering the podcast. Streaming, if you have Amazon Prime, it's free. And, you know, yeah, you can't watch it at the end of the day when you're tired because you have to, you know, read subtitles, but it's so good.
Yeah. Well, essentially free after you pay your monthly bill to Amazon or whatever.
It feels free to me.
Yes. So the writing of this movie is really interesting in that Bong Joon-ho wrote the screenplay, but it's inspired by a play called Come See Me by Kim Kwang-rim. The director has said that this was a huge inspiration and that it helped with the structure of the story. There's a lot that is different from the events that happened in the true crimes aspect of it. But one of the things I thought was really interesting was he was highly influenced by Alan Moore's From Hell graphic novel, which we covered in our Jack the Ripper episode.
Yes. Yep.
Actually, we have a copy of it, right? I don't know where it is.
Yeah, but I do. I have a copy of the graphic novel. Yep. I'm hoarding it.
Yeah. And, you know, you can kind of see a lot of it. It's cool that he didn't take any inspiration from the movie. He has himself said that the movie was greatly disappointing. Yeah. Which I think was our consensus. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it has a really large cast, but, you know, it's really down to the two detectives and then the kind of special detective that comes in from Seoul. So starting with actor Song Kang-ho, who plays Park Doo-man, and he is the kind of the main detective that is in charge of solving the murders. He's actually been in a ton of other films that Bong Joon-ho has directed, including The Host and also Snowpiercer. And then not the same director, but a South Korean film that is really good. He's in Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. So if any of you has seen that, his face may look familiar to you. We have Kim Sang-kyun, who plays Xiao Tae-yoon, who's like the younger detective, and he's the one that is brought in from Seoul to help out with the case because Park Doo-man's kind of partner is this character Cho Young-koo, and he's played by actor Kim Roy-ha, and he's the one that is not a very good detective. He tortures all of their suspects, I believe.
Yes, he does.
He like puts a handkerchief on his boot, I believe, to what, lessen the...
No, it's like one of the little booty covers. I had to put those on for my radiological worker training.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's to keep his boot from getting scratched when he's kicking the crap out of suspects, which is not why I wear it. I wear it because of radiation.
Yeah. It's not to not scratch up the suspect. It's to not scratch up his boot. That's the kind of guy he is. And we'll talk about him when we kind of go into the film a little bit more. Sergeant Shin Dong-chul, who's their boss, is played by actor Song Jae-ho. But that's kind of the core cast. You know, it's one of those movies where you just kind of follow them as they are trying to solve the case of the killings. I was able to pull up two taglines as a non-Hollywood picture. There aren't as many crazy ones. So the first one is just 1986 in a small town. For two detectives, everything was new.
I don't mind that. I feel like there's so much more to the story, though, than just, you know, them being new at doing this sort of investigation. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And this one, I guess, could actually be the elevator pitch of our show. Based on the true story of serial killings.
Yeah, perfect. No, it's very vague, but I feel like it works. And I think if you want to sell a movie like this, you know, that's, people are watching it because they're curious about these real life serial killings.
Yeah. 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 Speaking of real life serial killings, I wanted to, you know, get some of your initial thoughts on, just after we just talked about the case, your perception of the movie and what they kind of captured from reality. But there's something interesting that we kind of ended on with the true crime research, and that was that, you know, the killer was never found. But one of the things I did come across was that director Bong Joon-ho was confident that the killer would end up watching this movie. He actually purposely designed the final shot of the film so that Park Doo-man would look directly into the camera, and Park is looking at the audience. He's face to face with possibly the killer if the killer is watching this movie.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I didn't even think of that while I was watching the movie, although the final shot, that whole final scene is excellent. But man, I just got goosebumps. Ooh.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh yeah. My gosh.
And you know, the likelihood of the killer having seen this movie could have been pretty great because, I mean, it was very popular in South Korea at the time.
Yeah. And that's very similar to The Phantom Killer.
Yeah.
right? Where they end the movie with him, you know, basically being in line to see the film, The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
It's, oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Totally. Yeah.
Very, very meta. I love it.
Yeah. That's something else. I guess it's like his way of trying to see if it's like, confess.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like subliminal audio there that's like, confess.
Yeah.
Turn yourself in.
Or subliminal messages you can only read with special sunglasses.
Yeah. Totally. Obey.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I love this movie. It really gave me Zodiac vibes. I think that it's beautifully shot. It's very dark. It's very compelling story. And I know he talked about being inspired by that play in terms of how to create this narrative. And it's a narrative that you see in a lot of true crime stories, which is, you know, sometimes more true to the true story than other times. And that's the descent into madness of these people who are tasked with solving the case, and they just get so close to it and so involved that it kind of drives them crazy, just being kind of caught up in the mind of the killer, in the mind of the person doing these horrible things, and, you know, maybe finding out that you're also capable of horrible things. So I feel like that's the big story arc. In terms of how closely it follows the real killings, I saw online that two of the 10 victims were killed on rainy days, and only one was wearing red. So in the movie, everyone was killed on rainy days. Almost everyone's wearing red until, that pattern is discovered, and then the killer branches out. And the other interesting distinguishing characteristic of the killer in the movie is when he kills, he apparently, well, maybe he is the one requesting this one specific song on the radio, which is so creepy. I love those touches. I think that this killer did have a very distinct MO, particularly with how he killed his victims, which they do follow that in the movie. And they just expanded on it because it's a movie. You want it to be, cinematic. One thing that you do need to keep in mind when you're comparing this movie to the real case is that in this movie, they have the killer targeting, very beautiful young women, which I think is introducing like a sexual aspect to it. Like, he's killing women who he is attracted to, especially initially before it became just killing whoever he could get his hands on, as women are becoming more aware of him.
Yeah.
But in the true story, the first person he killed was a 71-year-old woman. Rape is not a crime that's about whether you're attracted to someone or not. It's about control. It really, I think, has nothing to do with that. So I think that's a very Hollywood type change to make. But no, overall, it's just so good. The actors are so good. Everything's so good. If you liked Zodiac, I think you would love this movie. And I love Zodiac. I have not seen anything comparable until watching this movie. Yeah.
Hey, high praise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, David? What did you think?
Oh, it was a really good movie. I think that what you said about, one of the things that it gets true is not descent into madness or whatever, I guess the sense of frustration and how far detectives are kind of pushed and how outside of their moral statutes or whatever they're willing to go, because that's a big part of the ending of this movie. And that's very, very interesting, very intense.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that they took all the victims and kind of made it easier for audiences to follow, like, oh, serial killer, they're all young women wearing red and on rainy days. And when the song plays, that ratchets up the dramatic tension towards those final murders.
Yeah. And it's just set up that way to give you these scenes where, the detectives are fighting in the office and suddenly one of them's like, everyone be quiet, and like turns up the radio and it's the song. And it just like, you just, it like makes your skin feel tight. It's just, it's so well done.
Yeah. That moment, I can't remember if it's that scene or not, but he reaches his hand outside and it has started to rain.
Yeah, it is that scene.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, those are the two parts are together now.
Yeah, it's a movie. I feel like Zodiac is very, very, very true to the real story. All the victims have the same name. Like, they are the victims who were killed. This, they definitely take liberties, but I can forgive that because it's so well done.
Yeah, I like the messiness of it. So like the crime scenes getting overrun by whether it's the news media or like even the first ones where it's just children playing in the fields and they happen to come running through.
Or the farmer on the tractor.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The tractor, the farmer just runs right through some footprints that they're about to use as evidence at the crime scene. The forensic teams showing up late. It's just all of those things just really come together so perfectly.
Yeah, and I think that it does a good job, you know, having this transition where it starts out where they do feel like these like bumbling country detectives, and then you get the introduction of Seo Tae-yoon, who is, you know, like a big city cop from Seoul, who comes in and does bring a lot of insight and can see that these cops, due to their treatment of suspects, are eliciting false confessions, multiple false confessions from different people. And, you know, this cop who comes in, he's the one that's able to, you know, make the connection with the rainy days. And he actually finds a victim that they didn't even know existed just based on, you know, a missing persons report filed that fits the pattern of red clothes and going missing on a rainy day. And, you know, is able to find her body. And he does all of this great work, and his kind of influence on Park Doo-man is like turning him into this like better, more capable cop. But then, of course, you know, the case gets so frustrating and they just keep failing to find this person, to put him away. And unfortunately, you basically see by the end, Tae-yoon, the detective from Seoul, becomes just as bad, if not worse, than that character of Yeon-ku, the one who beats the suspect, because he very nearly kills a suspect after it's revealed that the DNA was not a match, because he just, you know, can't take it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really heavy scene.
Yeah.
Like, the buildup is just pretty amazing with that story arc. One of the things, too, that is interesting, and it is interspersed from what we were talking about, you know, a little bit earlier, was the political unrest in South Korea at the time. There are several scenes where they definitely show that that is occurring. There's scenes of protests, and it does kind of become obvious that not everything is going to necessarily go their way, because the country's focus is on other things.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe the killer would have been caught. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah. And they also show about the issues with the forensic testing, where they had to actually send samples to another country. They had to send them to Japan to get, you know, the DNA back, which took so long. Basically, that's during that time that Tae-yoon really kind of, what is Michelle McNamara describes it as, like falling in love with this suspect, like this has to be the guy. And not only that, but, you know, during that time, the killer strikes again and kills actually a very young girl. So similar to the 14-year-old who was killed in the real case. And it's, yeah, it's, oh my gosh, it's powerful.
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, we're talking about how worn out and stressed the detectives are in this movie. So Seo Tae-yoon's character, the director wanted to like limit his food intake and let him sleep less in order for him to have that like grizzled demeanor. And I guess it worked. It was a little bit method.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this movie did really well in South Korea. It won a ton of awards. It won the Grand Bell Award for Best Film. And then it went on to gain all sorts of international acclaim. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, right. Well deserved.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely. We won't do a whole walkthrough of the movie. There's like a whole lot that happens. I feel like in a serial killer hunt film, we'll just let you kind of experience it yourself.
Yeah, seriously, just watch this movie.
But think about some of the things that we talked about with just like the detective work and you know, just how this serial killer setup kind of unfolds. But one of the things that, you know, we're talking about this abuse of suspects is there's a mentally handicapped boy who is Park Kwang-ho, and he is one of the first suspects. And I feel like it's just so cruel what happens to him in the beginning.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that could be real, because in that ghost story bit, there was a suspect who was hit by a train. Oh, spoiler
yeah.
alert.
Oh.
Poor Kwang-ho. Yeah, it's really rough, because I feel like we as the audience can recognize right away that this is not the one who killed people. You know, he's just a very childlike although, you know, he is an adult actor. And yeah, they take him in because he was known to have a bit of a crush on one of the victims and he would follow her around. So they like beat him into confessing and try to have him like lead through a recreating of the crime in front of all these reporters. And of course, that does not go well at all. And then later on, it turns out that he actually may have witnessed the murder of this woman. And unfortunately, as they're trying to get him to talk about it, a whole bunch of other stuff goes down and he's running away from them because he's terrified of them, because one of them, you know, beat him for days and days and days. And as he's running away, he gets hit by a train. So
yeah. The, you know, Yeon-ku, who's the partner that does the beating, I guess. Yeah, just kind of keep an eye, because the way he treats the suspects, and there's something a little like odd. It's like a little odd character thing that he does. I don't want to laugh, but it, like, he does this jump kick.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And it just, it's really cruel and awful, but it just like, he goes so crazy with it. He just like pulls this jump kick out of his hat at just the most kind of shocking moments. And it left me kind of like gasping every time. I was like, ugh, it's not funny. It makes me feel real uncomfortable, but it's a little bit like a wind-up toy or something.
It definitely made me laugh. It's like when the cats go after something. It's like just so sudden.
Yeah.
It's just like a cat sees, you know, another cat and gets scared and like jumps 3 feet in the air and like twists the body around. It's just like, bing, like it's yeah. on a springer. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Feel really bad.
Oh, no. Can you do?
But yeah, if you have not seen Memories of Murder, or even if, you know, you've seen it and you know that Bong Joon-ho has just all these awesome movies, you know, check out any of those that we mentioned as well.
Yeah. And there's a scene in this movie that I honestly think is scarier than anything I've seen in any horror movie ever.
Oh, I forgot about this.
And yeah, watch it and see if you can guess what scene I'm talking about, because yeah, I screamed.
It's good. It's a great scene. All right, well, that is Memories of Murder. You know, we hope you've enjoyed listening to us talk about the true crime aspect and all the stuff that really happened, and then how this version interprets the events and some of the changes they make to make it a little more cinematic. So, yeah. So if you have seen this movie, let us know what you think. Or if you check it out based on, you know, this episode, holler too, because we would love to talk about it. We could go on and on, I think, about this movie.
Yeah, join our cult of Based on a True Crime. Post there. Let's start talking about it.
Yes, and you can find that through our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. All right, so as we wrap up, I just wanted to see if in our busy week you had a chance to come up with anything for Now Playing.
Oh, I do. Was it last weekend on our Cult of Based on True Crime page? Amanda posted and said, Chelsea, you like rom-coms. Have you seen Set It Up, which is a new Netflix movie that is a romantic comedy that is amazing. Has Lucy Liu and Tate Diggs and whoever the two younger unknown actors are. But they're both great and it's so cute. And if you need a break, you know, if you watch Memories of Murder and it's just so dark that you need a break, you should check out Set It Up. Especially if you like rom-coms. Actually, even if you don't, because David was laughing along with the whole movie. I wouldn't say you're a rom-com fan.
No, but it was entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you like rom-coms, definitely check it out.
Yeah. What's your Now Playing?
So I just finished Stephen King's The Outsider, which I think I mentioned this earlier about how it may be up many of your alleys. Is that the saying? I loved it. It's really great. And if you're worried about the risk of a Stephen King flubbed ending, this does not have a flubbed ending. So there you go. What do you got for coming soon?
Actually, it's quite a coincidence because my coming soon is The Outsider. I just joined Scribd, which is like a audiobook subscription app, and it was available, and I figured, hey, I have a long commute, you know, I enjoy listening to podcasts, but sometimes I want to listen to something where it's not real murders, just fake murders. So I figured I would give it a go. I've got a big trip coming up and I think it'll be fun to listen to, and then we could talk about it finally. So
cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. What about you? What's your coming soon?
Yeah, I was looking at stuff for coming soon. I was like, what do I have in the queue? I'll just keep on the book roll, the Stephen King book roll. The Bizarre Bad Dreams, which is a short story collection. It's one of his more recent ones. And I just started the first short story, which is Mile 81. And it has already gotten into a car that eats people. So
yeah, Yeah, he really hates cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't blame him. I'm not a fan anyway.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for our what we're watching and reading or listening to. We're all over the internet. We're on the social media. We are on Instagram at Based on a True Crime, Twitter at True Crime Based. Find us on Facebook at Based on a True Crime Podcast, but most importantly with Facebook, join our discussion group Cult of Based on a True Crime.
Yeah, and we also have a Patreon, which we are releasing a new episode. It should be out by the end of this week for sure. It's actually recorded, but we just need to edit it after we edit this. And it's about Dracula and Vlad the Impaler. And I loved talking about that movie with you and talking about the true crime. So hopefully it came out pretty good. The only way to find out is to donate to our Patreon. Just $1 a month gets you access to not only our episode on Dracula, but we have actually a pretty big backlog now of episodes. We've been doing this since January.
Yes, yeah. $1 a month. Oh, $5 a month. Oh, $3 a month.
Perfect.
If you would like to see my artwork and what I'm up to creatively besides this awesome show, check me out on Instagram at Lab Creature. Our podcast theme and supporting music was composed and performed by Nico Vatisse of We Talk of Dreams, and he can be found on Twitter and on Instagram, both handles at We Talk of Dreams. Also, his website, wetalkofdreams.com. So as we wrap up this episode, just wanted to remind you, give you a little friendly parting words. Death is but a door.
And time is but a window.
We'll be back.
And stay tuned for a word from our pod friends.
Psst. Hey, you. Do you like the Tales from the Crypt series? Do you like spooky things in general? Then check out the Good Evening Kitties podcast. That's Good Evening Kitties podcast. GOODEVENINGKIDDIES podcast. Each week, I'll review a new episode from the TV series The Tales from the Crypt. Find me on Podbay, Podbean, or iTunes. That's the Good Evening Kitties podcast. Check it out today.
Hey everyone, I'm Jamie, and I host a podcast called Murderish, which takes you inside stories of murder and other creepy events. The first episode of Murderish lets listeners be a fly on the wall for a first-degree murder trial. The story is told from a juror's perspective, as I was that juror. If you are a true crime junkie and need to know every detail, you'll feel right at home with this podcast. Follow Murderish on Twitter at MurderishPod and on Facebook at Murderish Podcast. And don't worry, this doesn't mean you're a murderer. It just means you're murder-ish.
That's horrible.
That's true.
So strange.
Usually.
I can't imagine what that's like.
Do you want to?
That could never happen to me.
It might.
Lock him away. He's pure evil. Or insane.
Or human. My name's Kate. I have worked as a forensic psychologist, as well as in prisons and as a crisis clinician. My job was to figure out who gets locked up and who gets a key. To find the humanity in inhumane situations. So, are you sure you really want to know?
Yeah, maybe.
Because by the end of the episodes, you just might end up thinking...
I felt better before I knew that.
You can find me at IWB Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Instagram, or you can email me at iwbpodcast@gmail.com.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.